A podcast of the cinema.
Hosted by...
You're Dave White.
That's correct.
And I'm Alonzo Duralde.
Sure.
Welcome.
Whatever. You know what I hate?
What do you hate, Dave White?
I hate Ziploc bags.
You know what? I bet this was... If the Ziploc bag is at fault for the thing you're about to complain about, I imagine it's operator failure.
No. I know how to operate a Ziploc bag.
Mm-hmm. Do you?
Yes. You know why? Because I'm the kook of this house.
You are the kook of this house.
I'm the
arch kook Petulia.
Just call me chef from now on.
That's never happening.
Mother, father, and
quinoa.
Monkey fighting quinoa. I cooked the quinoa. I did this intentionally. I cooked more quinoa than I needed for the last dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I put it in the Ziploc bag.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saving it. It's in the Ziploc bag for less than a week. I open it up. I don't even look at it. I think I'm quinoa confident.
You have quinoa confidence.
I don't even look. I just dump it in the skillet. I'm going to heat it up, put some little parsley on top, fried egg.
This is a movie podcast. We'll be getting to that part soon.
I'm just telling you an important thing.
Yes.
Eventually, it will relate to cinema someday. Maybe on this podcast. Maybe not. Who cares? Mold. Mold of the quinoa in the Ziploc bag.
Well, how long does quinoa keep?
In the past, my quinoa experiences
mm-hmm.
have been that it will stay in that Ziploc bag for as long as you need it to stay in that
Ziploc
bag. Well,
then my suspicion is that you did not click properly and some air got in.
Nope, I did.
Came to ruin your quinoa.
I did everything right.
Nothing's ever your fault, Dave.
I zipped it. I locked it.
You did you
flipped it,
did
reversed
you,
it.
Did you chop it and channel it?
I smacked it up, flipped it, rubbed it down.
Well, I think it's probably your fault.
It all had to get thrown away. We wound up having fried eggs on toast for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
That was delicious.
They were nifty, and you have a really great egg frying game. But
should I wait and? Should I not tell people what it is?
I think
should I only
let's
tell
save
them
that
on...
for our subscribers who get Linoleum Knife and Fork,
no.
A food podcast hosted by
you
two
know
film
what?
Critics.
Added value. I'm gonna
all listen. Right. It's a Thanksgiving bounty.
You put the fried egg. You separate the yolk from the white. Now this is only if you want a nice runny yolk on your toast, and you do.
Yes.
I mean, I'm assuming you do.
If you're a hard yolk person, then ignore this.
Because that's what I like.
Yeah.
You put the white in the pan first. Get it all cooked up. You don't want an undone white.
You want to start crisping the edges.
Yeah.
But you don't want to overcook your yolk while you're doing it.
No, you don't. Then you put the yolks on, oh so gently, on top of that white.
Mm-hmm.
And you flip the white over the yolk. You got a perfectly preserved, cooked, runny yolk in the middle of your white.
Now is the white still,
and it's on for the yolk is on for just bam 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 that fast.
Is the white still sort of soft enough that if you put the yolk back on top of it that it will incorporate?
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's right. And you hedge your bets by flipping the yolk over the
right.
You flipping the white over the yolk.
I suspect between
sort of encase it.
Between the plopping and the flipping, I would probably break a yolk in there somewhere.
I'm an extremely gentle lover when it comes to frying eggs.
You want an egg cook with a slow hand and an easy touch.
I'm that man.
So, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. This is it's that time of year.
Fix it. Well, it's Thanksgiving in like a week or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, at the time of this recording,
we're
several days out.
The thought of Thanksgiving is around us whenever it is you listen to this show.
Yes.
So enjoy it. You know, if your relatives are awful people, then ruin Thanksgiving. And if they're not, then be nice.
Here's my advice. If your relatives are awful people, keep your headphones on.
Be like the sullen teen in any movie who never takes his or her earbuds out.
When it's time to take
when they're not connected to something.
When you have to take the headphones off, just smile. No matter what heinous thing anyone says or does, just go, this food is so good.
I thought you were an advocate of last year's popular hashtag ruin Thanksgiving.
I was an advocate of last year's popular hashtag ruin Thanksgiving, but this year I'm exhausted.
Fair enough.
I'm,
it's been 12 really drudgerous months.
I'm so beaten down, like, I don't even want to go into it, because it would begin to depress the people listening.
Fair enough.
I'm wrung out.
Think about
yeah.
delicious gravy.
I think about that every day.
It's the most graviest time of the year.
It's the most graviest time. What's the films of the week? We can't talk about everything except movies.
No, obviously.
For forever.
Indeed.
Not here.
At some point, we have to come crashing down to earth.
Not on this podcast of the cinema.
Of course, obviously, Justice League. Because, you know, no one on the internet is talking about that movie.
Not enough.
I really feel like it needs our attention.
It needs two more middle-aged dudes need to talk about Justice League.
Yep.
During Justice League, I'll tell you what happened. I was alone, which is weird, right? Like, I mean, I was alone in my part of the theater.
What hour of the day are we talking?
I went at 9:30 in the morning.
Okay, so it's not that unusual.
And I went to the Grove, and I was pretty much alone in the theater. There were like four other people there. And they were far away from me. So technically, I was alone.
So were you like in those last few rows behind the railing kind of deal?
Do you know where... Okay, like you're in the big... You know how the Grove has like two or three huge houses?
It has the little loge where the Statler Waldorf seats.
The Statler and Waldorf seats are on the sides. And then in the back, separating the main seats... is a set of stairs, and then you go up, and in the back, there's like four or five rows of big, large, comfortable seats that are not like the seats down front.
Right.
Like, if you love to sit down front, you're getting the crappier seats. You sit in the back.
The narrower seats.
Those
anyway.
Seats are nice.
Not everyone needs our square footage.
I would like to tell all of the thickly set people, you got to sit in the back at the Grove where
they do you right.
The seats are so lovely. Anyway, that's where I was. And for some reason, people don't want to sit up there.
Nope.
Because they think it's too far away. But it's not. You get all the movie. You get 100% of that screen.
Some people like to have their field of vision more filled in, you know. I'm not an...
Oh, not me.
No, I know. You are back row Sally.
What if the bad person comes in? I need to be able to see him come in. And it's going to be a him. When the bad person comes into the movie theater, it's going to be a him, and you want to see him.
So you can do what, exactly?
Run and or hide.
Okay.
Also, in the back... in that back row, there's an exit.
Right.
Yeah. And it goes out to the secret Los Angeles... Hey, Los Angeles people. If you go see a movie at the Grove...
And you're in house one.
Or two. Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
There's a secret...
Back exit.
And it leads out into sort of a balcony of the lobby.
That they've never quite figured out what to do with.
Part
of it is now the Cheesecake Factory.
And the other part is now staging for Dancing with the Stars.
When that happens, yes.
Which is happening live at the Grove soon. there are two, not one, but two small bathrooms, and you can lock, yes, and you can lock the door on both of them.
Good to know.
It is, it's bliss. No one's bugging you because no one knows they're up there.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably cameras in there, so don't think like you're gonna get shenanigans happening.
You're not gonna go in there and do the Humpty Hump.
But no, if you want to hide from the bad person with a gun,
you want to hide from the bad person, or you just want to have a nice private bathroom experience, like you would at your own home
after sitting through Independence Day Resurgence or whatever.
Yeah. Anyway.
You were in a very empty theater for Justice League, which apparently you were not alone, since it underperformed.
So I could take some notes on my phone with my, you know, with my light turned all the way down.
Right.
Yeah. But I could take some notes on my phone.
And what do these notes say?
I'm fixing to tell you. Why don't you tell people what this movie's about?
Okay. So Superman is dead.
Yes.
Of that there can be no doubt.
Correct.
Bruce Wayne worries that other aliens are going to show up, and he alone cannot fend them off, so he's going to put together a League of Justice,
right?
Which involves Wonder Woman, who he met in Batman vs. Superman, and then finding the people that were on Luthor's computer, Aquaman, The Flash, and the Cyborg. And together, they fight a lame-o CG villain named Steppenwolf and bring Superman back to life, which is not a spoiler because that S logo is in every single poster of the movie, even if Superman isn't.
No.
At some point during the filming, Zack Snyder had to leave the project because of a tragedy in his family, and they brought Joss Whedon in to take over.
Yes.
And then he wound up doing a lot of reshoots that he wouldn't necessarily have had to have done to make it more Whedon-y. So you have this sort of unwieldy marriage of like Marvel Avengers stuff, but with a lot of sludgy, dark Zack Snyder stuff. And
grimdark, as I'm seeing on the internet.
Grimdark, exactly. Yeah. And it's not a lot of fun, but it's not really as terrible as Batman vs. Superman or Suicide Squad.
It is the least terrible of the bunch so far.
Well, not counting Wonder Woman.
I don't know. Okay. But no, not counting Wonder Woman. I don't even count.
I know. Wonder Woman, it seems like it's from another planet, but it is technically part of all this.
And it, you know, where's the director of Wonder Woman for the next all these movies?
You no kidding.
Why not?
I know.
Because I just for okay. I didn't know that Cyborg was even a character.
Yeah, by the end of the movie, he really isn't.
in comic books, I didn't even know he was a character.
Yeah, he was originally in the Teen Titans.
And, but I'm glad he's here because his robot suit looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my list. I made a good list and a bad list.
Okay.
Here's my good list. Number one, Wonder Woman. Number two, Lady Island.
Yes.
Number three, Jason Momoa with no shirt on.
Although he does dive into the ocean wearing denim.
Number four, Jason Momoa with a shirt on. Number five, Henry Cavill, shirtless. Specifically, Henry Cavill's chest.
Which,
all the way across your screen.
Especially when it distracts you from Henry Cavill's erased mustache.
I'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
Number six, Robot Guy's robot suit.
Okay.
Number seven, those dumb on-fire boxes.
Yes.
Whatever they were.
Mother boxes.
They shot column of of power.
Do you want to know what those are called?
I don't know anything.
In the comics?
Sure.
They don't say it in the movie.
Why?
Because they're called boom tubes. For real.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah. Yeah. They're boom tubes.
Oh my god!
This is all from the Jack Kirby wing of DC Comics. They didn't mention the world where the evil Darkseid lives. I think Darkseid gets mentioned very quickly in passing. It is called...
Yes.
A-P-O-K-O-L-I-P-S. Apocalypse.
That's not as exciting as a boom.
No, I know. Boom tube.
A boom tube.
Oh, God.
I'm glad I'm
DJ Boom Tube, I think, would be a great hip hop
band. I'm glad I'm married to you so that I can know these things. But I liked those on fire boxes because they were stupid. And I thought, this is an appropriately stupid thing that is entertaining to me.
Right.
Like, oh, we have to kill it. Because everyone walks around with a stone face saying things like, we have to collect the on fire boxes. If we don't, everything will be on fire. And when they say these things, I'm just like, y'all so stupid.
Well, I like how the boxes are key to the bad guy's plot, and yet when the heroes have their hands on one, they sort of all turn their back on it at the same time so he can just grab it, and they're right. Like, oh, wait!
Yeah. Okay, here's what's bad. Number one. Ben Affleck's head seems to be getting squozed out of his mask.
Mm.
Did you notice that? Every time he has on the bat helmet,
uh-huh.
It's like his mouth is being pushed out like toothpaste. It's like they made it a half a size too small for his skull.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, it's like someone's forcing him to do the chubby bunny. Also, there are boring parts that are loud and dark.
Yes.
Also, Diane Lane has a really messy mom wig. It's not good.
Hmm.
It is not a good it is not a good mom wig. It's messy and weird and a little lumpy.
Hmm.
Number four, Ezra Miller has to be the wussy millennial comic relief.
Uh-huh.
And I'm irritated by that.
Ezra Miller kind of needs to knock it off.
It's not his fault. I think this is the Joss Whedon-y parts.
Probably. And I either that or like they just made the mistake of telling him, you're the comedy relief in this movie, and so he's never not shticking.
Yeah.
And it's like, less. Please, less.
He was encouraged to go there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like suddenly Jerry Lewis is in this mm-hmm. movie.
Finally, number five, all the parts that are without Wonder Woman and Aquaman.
Okay, and here's the thing. I know you like looking at Jason Momoa.
Yes.
But did you not find him super irritating in this movie?
No, it's fine.
See, to me, it felt like somewhere along the line, they thought, okay, in Entourage, at one point, Vinny plays Aquaman. Yeah. So we'll return the favor by making Aquaman seem like a character from Entourage.
That did not bother me.
I thought he was kind of the bro of the seas. I was not having it.
Okay, sure. Fine.
I mean, look, his solo movie is going to be directed by James Wan, yeah. So that could work. But as long as it's not like this version, because I just found him real irritating real fast.
All he has to do
especially when he tells Cyborg, my man!
Okay, sure, that was stupid.
Yeah.
All he's got to do is take off his shirt.
I know. You're easy that way. Can we talk about Henry Cavill's erased mustache, please? Because
If no one had... Advance warned me about it, uh-huh. I wouldn't have been looking for it.
Really?
Yeah.
Because no one did advance warn me about it, and the second it appears, I was like, gah!
What's happening?
Yeah.
Did you wonder what was happening, or did you know?
I didn't know exactly what the deal was, but I went with, you know, our friend Tom Ford, who is a visual effects producer.
Yes.
And I, like, looked at him, and he's like, oh, yeah, the mustache.
It would have flown right past me. But because I knew, I kept looking at his mouth going, is there something wrong? I guess there's something wrong.
Because look,
maybe there's something wrong.
I miss a lot. There are a lot of times where people will say, oh, the blah, blah, blah effect was so terrible. I'm like, really? It looked fine to me. But no, his face just looked like, what is going on? It was like in the David S. Pumpkins Halloween special.
Yeah.
When Bobby Moynihan had the mustache and beard for his probably canceled CBS sitcom.
Yes.
And they just had to like cover it up with as much white face powder as they could.
Yes.
Yeah. It just is like, why not just have a swarm of bees flying in front of his mouth? That would be less distracting.
Yeah.
I'm a lifelong comics reader, and especially a lifelong Justice League reader.
Yeah,
like
you
I have
are.
Really dug Justice League right. in its many, you know, incarnations, from sort of straight up like DC All-Star version to the kind of tongue-in-cheek, half-comedic 80s version with like Blue Beetle and Booster Gold and the sort of like a lot of also-rans. You know, there's a potential to do something fun there. And, you know, if George Miller had gotten to make his, you know, Justice League movie like 10 years ago when he wanted to do it, or it was either 2007 or 1997, I forget, but at some point before all superheroes became so much of the currency of the realm, he wanted to make a movie, and that would have been, I'm sure, outstanding. But this just kind of isn't fun and is awfully boring at times, and it's either a rehash of stuff we don't like in these movies or stuff that we've seen too much in these movies. So it's like between Whedon and Snyder, you get the two poles of what superhero movies look like, but they're both really familiar poles at this point. Whereas like you bring in...
And they seem at odds with each other.
Yeah, and they don't mesh well at all. But like, you know, that's why... You know, you go after like a James Gunn or a Taika Waititi or somebody who's going to be like, hey, I have something different because we're getting a lot of the same. And Patty Jenkins, for that matter, you know,
right.
Like the superhero fatigue is setting in. And the fact that this movie didn't break $100 million in its first weekend in the U.S. is indication of that. And so, you know, I think now it's sort of incumbent upon these guys to like mix it up. Give us a superhero musical, do one in black and white, something. But like, it's just the same old is killing us all.
Yeah. And that is why I'm content to speak strictly in a prurient way about Jason Momoa and Henry Cavill, because nothing else actually matters.
Not really.
If this were a real movie, I would not be, you know,
Objectifying them. Speaking of things, yeah. I don't notice, I did not catch this, but I've heard several critics who I trust, including Christie, point this out. Mm-hmm. Did you sense more of a male gaze with the handling of Wonder Woman?
I have heard a couple people say that they noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
I did not. Because, honestly, when she's on screen doing stuff, all I'm thinking is,
Yay, Wonder Woman's
here. Like, even if the camera is... only giving you her butt, I'm thinking to myself, yay, Wonder Woman's here. Like, it doesn't...
yeah, exactly. I missed that detail as well. I know the whole that thing that was going on the internet for a second about, you know, Patty Jenkins' Amazon uniforms versus Snyder's turned out to be overblown and not quite true and yada yada. But a lot of critics have pointed out that in this movie, when Wonder Woman enters the frame, she tends to do so, like, butt first or, you know, cleavage first. Mm. Although,
so does Jason Momoa.
I was going to say, Jason Momoa's cleavage, it's hilarious because he either wears tight shirts that draw your eye to his cleavage,
yes.
or he removes his shirt
what
and he
you
has...
call it? His heavage?
His heavage. I didn't make that up.
Okay.
Or he has tattoos that also are designed to draw your eyes to his cleavage. It's crazy.
So, whatever.
So, yeah. Justice League.
Wonder. I did not want to go.
Me neither.
And it is about a 10-year-old boy played by Jacob Tremblay
from Room,
who has facial deformities.
Yes.
Born congenital face neck up problems.
Right.
He can't hear, he can't see, he can't breathe.
And then
they have to spend the first 10 years of his life constructing things on his head to make him see, hear, and breathe.
Yes. And some, like, you know, plastic surgery for, you know, aesthetic purposes.
To shape his face. Yeah.
But he still, you know, does not look like your average kid.
No. He looks like Eric Stoltz in Mask, kind of.
Dialed down.
Yeah, dialed down quite a bit. But this is in the tradition of Mask and Elephant Man and every other movie about someone who is physically different from the world, and the world can't stop staring at them.
Right. Yeah. The boy with green hair.
Right. So,
and the trailers make this movie look super treacly and...
unappealing.
Yeah.
Right. Now,
however,
Owen Wilson is his father, Julia Roberts is his mother, a young woman named Isabella Vidovich?
Yes, she's on The Fosters.
Oh, she's on The Fosters.
Yeah.
Okay.
As a sister.
I am noticing that now. She's on The Fosters. And she plays the older sister. Then there are some other people in the movie. Jacob Tremblay's best friend in the school he goes to. The mean kids who are bullies to Jacob Tremblay.
Yes,
they're in the film.
The school principal, who's played by Mandy Patinkin.
The sister's best friend, who has sort of abandoned the sister.
Yes.
She's in the movie. And I'm telling you this because the trailer, once again, tells you that this is a movie, an inspirational, heartwarming story about a little boy with an unusual face who learns to overcome adversity, and then people give him a standing ovation at some point near the end of the film.
Right.
That's also in the trailer. What the trailer does not tell you is that this is a film about him and everybody in his life, and it's broken up into little...
Chapters,
and each person gets a chapter.
Well, not the dad.
Well, not the dad.
Most of the people you mentioned.
It's Owen Wilson, and who cares?
Yeah.
But the,
I want to know what the dad does to afford the biggest brownstone in Brooklyn.
He does a rich person's job.
And spends so much time with his family.
He does a rich guy's job. They never tell you what his job is, but it's something that makes them rich.
Clearly.
Because they live in a beautiful brownstone right in the middle of New York City. And the kid
goes to a great private school.
Yeah. And so,
who plays the best friend? I want to give that kid a shout out because he's also the kid from Suburbicon, who was the only thing I liked in Suburbicon.
Noah Jupe.
He's terrific.
Yeah.
But yeah, this movie is very much about, it's not just about the kid and how great he is, but it's about the family and how the kid's life has affected them. Like the sister has this whole sort of section about what it's like to be the child that is not getting any attention because your younger brother has huge medical difficulties that take all the parents' attention, and how she sort of subsists as the kind of the one who isn't any problem, and what that's like. They touch briefly on, there's a lovely little cameo from Sonia Braga as her late grandmother about their relationship. You find out about why the best friend has shined her on. You find out what the deal is with the bully and where he comes from and where the friend comes from.
Oh,
and
can I just talk about the best friend for a little bit?
Yeah.
The kid named Noah Jupe.
Yes.
Kid's like 10.
Mm-hmm.
British.
Shut up.
British and already doing an amazing American accent.
Dead on. I had no idea.
He was on Downton Abbey.
What?
Yeah.
As what?
It's just some random kid.
Oh, man.
But he's been in, like, British television and,
Damn those Brits.
they come out of the... Like, here's what happens. You get born in England, and then if at three you say, Mummy, I want to be on television. And they say, well, you're going to have to learn to do an American accent. And that's when they start training you.
So we can ship you overseas to take their jobs.
Yeah. And then, of course, because there's a genetic thing in every person in England that allows them to impersonate an American.
Yeah, they have a better ear for us than we do for them.
Well, and that's because a generic American accent is so commonplace and it's so everywhere. But if you try to do a generic British accent, you're going to fail because there are like 100...
Right.
Pierce, 300 of them.
If you are Mrs. Doubtfire, Pierce Brosnan is going to catch you.
Yeah.
Well, and also they are inundated with much more of our media than we are with theirs.
Right.
You know, unless
you go hunting for
unless you have Acorn TV in your house.
Right.
The Brits get a constant diet of American movies and TV shows.
Have I talked about Loch Ness on LKTV yet?
I want to say you have.
The Scottish mystery.
I'm pretty sure you have.
I talked about seeing one episode of it this past summer when we were in Atlanta, but I haven't talked about it, I think, in its full six-episode arc.
Put that on your list for the next LKTV.
It's real good. I have to like see if I...
With another Downton Abbey alum.
Oh, that's right.
O'Brien.
Siobhan Finneran.
Yeah. So Wonder, as much as it's being sold as this treacly thing, is actually it is genuinely heartfelt and compassionate about human frailty and about...
It does not bonk you over the head with stuff.
It's based on a book, which is apparently like read in a lot of schools, and that's part of why this movie's doing so well.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. And it's co-written and directed by Stephen Chbosky, who did Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Yes. I didn't go to a press screening. I went to opening day. This is me, right? Thinking I'm going to hide away from the world. Mm-hmm. There's nothing better than being alone in a movie theater. And I thought it
was going to be all Justice League.
I'm going to go out to the Burbank, AMC Burbank 6. That's not even the one in the mall.
No.
That's the one next to the mall that is literally underground. You walk in at street level and take a long escalator down into...
The basement of the Alamo.
The basement of the Alamo.
And it might as well be a speakeasy. Like, it's so hard to find.
And it's not easy to locate. As a movie theater,
yeah,
because you all you see is a set of doors, and a sign way up top on top of the Barnes and Noble that sits on top of it.
Wow,
and so like you have to know where it is to get there,
mm-hmm. And you have to have the secret knock.
So I'm thinking, all right, Friday night, 6 p.m. Ain't nobody gonna be in this movie theater. I'm gonna be alone in those nice reclining seats. It was packed.
Oh, yeah.
It was packed.
Because kids are going. Kids and parents are going.
There's people of all ages, all genders. Like, it was everyone in this theater. I'm like, who the hell are you people? Y'all know this movie's going to suck, right?
Hey, I just...
And then it didn't suck. It's sweet and kind. And it's just about people's lives. And Julia Roberts, when she wants to... make you feel things,
mm-hmm.
She can do it easily.
Oh, yeah.
And she's a sorceress.
She even does the Pretty Woman thing of looking in a box and laughing.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, y'all go see this movie.
Yeah, it's quite lovely.
I'm stunned that I'm saying this.
And it was produced by Walden Media, who has made a lot of kids' movies that I like, even though they are run by a horrible right-wing billionaire.
Oh,
Philip Anschutz. They're the people that gave us, you know, the Narnia movies and Mr. Magorium's Wonder Emporium and Bridge to Terabithia.
Yeah.
They also gave us this past week, and I totally forgot to mention it, and we have to put it on this show, The Star.
Did we not talk about
we
it?
We have not
on
reviewed it yet.
One?
Nope, because it opened on the same day as Justice League.
All right, so why don't you tell us all about that? Because I didn't go and I'm not going to go.
So The Star is an animated film that decided that, hey, since there were barnyard animals at the nativity of our Lord Jesus Christ, what if we made them wacky talking animals?
Farting animals.
And made, not so much farting, but they're definitely a lot of butt-shaking animals.
Pooping, farting, butt-shaking?
Pooping is mentioned, a lot of butt-shaking happens.
All right.
And made them responsible for getting Joseph and Mary away from the evil Romans and into the barn. And it's as dumb as it sounds. It is not funny. It occasionally grinds to a halt to be... genuinely churchy, you know, like a mouse witnesses the angel Gabriel appearing unto the Virgin Mary to inform her that she will be bearing, you know, the Messiah. You know, Joseph, when he learns that his new bride is pregnant and kind of freaks out about it, immediately hears from God and calms down. This is just a weird mishmash of things, and it's not a very good cartoon. The animation style is whatever. It's serviceable, but not particularly attractive or innovative. The all-star cast is not that great, except for I liked Adie Bryant as a pushy lamb. The spiritual stuff, it, like I said, the movie just sort of stops to give it to you, so it's a little bit on the sledgehammer side. So, yeah, the nativity is tough to pull off in movies. I wrote a book about Christmas movies, and I've still never watched The Nativity Story all the way through without falling asleep.
It's fine. I saw the whole thing
okay.
in press screening back when it was released, and it's fine. It's got, you know,
the Whale Rider girl.
Yeah, Keisha. Sorry,
I was going to say Knight Pulliam, and yes, I know that's not it.
Rudy
Hughes, is, yeah. right?
I don't quote me on her
the
name.
Whale Rider actress.
Yeah. It has that quality that the first Twilight film had.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it's Catherine Hardwicke.
Because it's Catherine Hardwicke, who is pretty good at teen girls in trouble.
Well, yeah, she did 13 too.
And that seems to be sort of the ongoing message of her films.
She also did that terrible Red Riding Hood movie.
Same deal.
Well, I was going to say, still the wheelhouse, but, same thing. But not a good one.
Yeah, not great. Anyway, you don't have to see it.
That's kind of been the impression that I'm under. It's not one that...
It is.
It has not... Exactly. It has not been embraced as a contemporary holiday classic, and neither will The Star.
Right.
That's all I got.
By rights. I hope not. I hope it tanked.
It's doing okay. You know, I'm sure.
Also, there was already a 1970 TV special called The Night the Animals Talked.
That's right.
Equally terrible. But I was six and I thought it was great.
You know, I don't know that I've ever seen Nestor the Long-Eared Christmas Donkey either.
Also terrible, but I was young and thought it was great. All right. Let's split the difference on the Thanksgiving movies.
Okay.
Since that's coming up, and mm-hmm. we've both already seen Coco.
Yes.
Yeah.
Coco, the latest from Pixar, is their Day of the Dead movie. We had The Book of Life a few years back, which was a Fox animated film that Guillermo del Toro executive produced. And this is, you may remember a few years back when Disney got into hot water because they tried to trademark the Day of the Dead.
I didn't know anything about
this. Oh, yeah.
When did this
happen? Like 2 or 3 years ago. Like when they were going into production on this, they really literally tried to own the Day of the Dead. And
it's like Kylie Jenner trying to own the name Kylie.
Exactly like that, yes. And Mexico was like, no. And they won. So that didn't happen. But anyway, the movie is...
All of Mexico said no.
Yeah. I don't even know. I speak Spanish. I don't even know if that no has an accent on it or not. I'm going to say it doesn't. But it does have the upside down exclamation point.
I defer to you beforehand. All Spanish language.
I know. Yeah. But the accents always
even though you
lose me.
Listen, you speak the weird wrong Spanish anyway. So.
I know.
Yeah.
Castilian.
You speak it with the th 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 th.
That's
the kind that you only hear in movies and television.
No, and in Spain.
Also there.
You've been there.
Remember that guy that said that to you that one time? You were talking to some dude in Spanish here in town, and he stopped you and he said, "Oh." And he said it to you in Spanish. I've never heard anyone speaking that kind of Spanish in person. I thought it was only on TV.
I do remember that.
And I was like, that's because it's weird. And it's the weird wrong Spanish.
It is not the weird wrong Spanish. No more than British English is the weird wrong English. Anyway. This is a film that is... set in Mexico, it is steeped in Mexican culture and the whole idea behind the Day of the Dead and the ancestors being able to travel back and forth on that day to visit the living. And it's also steeped in, like, one of the lead kid in the film wants to be a musician and he admires this great, you know, legendary singer-songwriter that everyone reveres. And of course, all of his songs are in English, and you just have to sort of wrap your head around
and
that.
And so is the film.
And so is the film, yeah. with the occasional, like, mama thrown in, you know.
Right, right.
So our lead character wants to be a musician, but his great-great-grandmother was abandoned by her musician husband and not only taught herself to become a cobbler and created this sort of family shoemaking business, but vowed that there would never, ever, ever again be music in this family.
None.
And through a complicated series of circumstances, the kid winds up crossing over into the land of the dead where he sort of faces off with the great-great-grandmother and meets this guy who is, you know, kind of shifty and almost forgotten. So he's close to dissolving entirely, because if you don't have anybody who puts your picture on the refienda, is that what it's called?
I don't know.
I apologize. This is a Mexican thing, and the Spaniards don't have an equivalent, so I forget what this thing is called. But basically, the sort of altar that you put up every year, where you put up the pictures of your relatives, and you put out, you know, their favorite foods and flowers and all that kind of stuff. No one does that for this guy, and so he's close to being completely forgotten. And so it's about the kid, you know, trying to find his illustrious ancestor who's a musician to get his blessing. It's about this guy trying to cross back over. It's about, you know, the family chasing the kid. It hits a lot of the sort of Pixar plot points. You know, there's the sort of fake ending and then the real ending. There's the celebrity who turns out to be less trustworthy than you thought. There's a lot of stuff. But it's crazily colorful.
Right.
Quite moving.
Like, psychedelically so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite moving, and the songs are good. I like this movie a lot.
Songs are good, and I really was moved by the family story.
Yeah.
I get so bored and irritated and annoyed with this. There's nothing more important than family. In these animated features and in lots of other
films. Adam Sandler films.
Yeah. Family comes first.
Yeah.
Like, go jump off a cliff, all of you. Take your family with you. But
not that there's anything wrong with that sentiment, but you have to back it up.
When it works well,
yeah.
When it's done properly, when you feel like there's weight and meaning behind it, then I'm all right.
That's the thing I like about both this film and The Book of Life, is that because it is... When they talk about family, it's not just like, oh, your mom and your dad and your sister. It's about the generations going back, all the ancestors, all the people whose lives led up to you being in this place, in this time where you are right now.
Yes.
And American culture doesn't go into that stuff as much. I mean, like, yeah, there's people who are interested in genealogy and a certain thing about family trees, but I think... you know, it's a much bigger deal in Mexican culture and in a lot of, you know, in Spain, certainly.
Yes.
It's a bigger deal that you know about your great-grandparents, you know, and that you sort of have some idea of what they did and where you come from. And yeah, I think this movie captures that really powerfully.
Agree.
So go see it. Indeed. It's great.
And there is a 21-minute featurette.
Yes, that we didn't get to see.
We didn't get to see in the press screening.
It's an Olaf Holiday movie, so if you're a big Frozen fan.
It's got like three songs in it.
And something like that, yeah.
Are you going to go buy a ticket just to see that?
I kind of might have to.
Right.
Unless they send
us... sit through Coco again?
Unless they... Well, maybe.
Theater hop into something else?
Yeah, one of those things. Or maybe they'll send us a screener.
Oh, they might.
Yeah.
That could happen, actually.
That could happen, but I would like to see it.
Right. The Man Who Invented Christmas. Hey, guess what? I just invented Christmas. I'm Charles Dickens, and I just did this, and I invented Christmas.
So there's this really good book called The Man Who Invented Christmas by Les Standiford. Standiford, sorry.
And it is a nonfiction book.
A nonfiction book
about
Dickens creating A Christmas Carol, what was happening in Dickens' life and career at that point, the sort of mechanics of getting it written and published under a fairly quick deadline, because he decided late in the year, hey, I'm going to do a Christmas story.
Right.
And also looks takes a broad look at kind of the history of Christmas as it is observed and celebrated in the Western world, and how the publication and success of A Christmas Carol impacted the way that we celebrate Christmas now. Almost none of that is in this movie. This movie stars Dan Stevens as Charles Dickens, who is in a bit of a rough patch because after early success with, you know, The Pickwick Papers and Oliver Twist, he's, you know, in the middle of a bit of a rut. You know, Barnaby Rudge, Martin Chuzzlewit, his Notes on America, none of them were...
I think Nicholas Nickleby was in there too, and no one cares. You're
that comes later.
All right.
None of them were flying off the shelves. So he decides, hey, I'm going to write this Christmas book, this Christmas story. And it's, again, late in the year, so he has like 6 weeks to do the whole thing and to get it published. And he publishes it himself. And he has to get John Leach to do the illustrations. John Leach is played here by the great Simon Callow.
Not Simon Cowell.
No.
British character actor Simon Callow.
And Orson Welles' biographer.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the shtick of the movie is that once Dickens thinks of a character, the character follows him around. So when he thinks of Scrooge, whoom, he manifests as Christopher Plummer playing Scrooge. And Scrooge follows Dickens around for the rest of the movie, nagging him over his shoulder, second-guessing him, telling him he's never going to finish the story.
Keep talking.
And then, okay, this is also one of those movies about a writer that reduces the writer to a stenographer, because apparently everyone around him is giving him the best lines for his book. So you have some guy in conversation say, "Are there no workhouses?" And somebody else who says, "A poor excuse to pick a man's pocket every 25th of December." And it's like, wow, this just writes itself.
Yeah.
It's broad and it's dumb and it doesn't explain the man who invented Christmas part at all.
Yeah,
you know,
go into that.
There's this whole rich history where, like, you know, in some of the early centuries AD or BC. No, it's still. Are we still at AD or
my microphone is about to fall off onto me? Okay, go on.
I know they changed BC to BCE. Is AD now something else?
I don't know.
Anyway, CE, whatever it is. The Pope moved Christmas to December. Like, yes. The Bible does not have him born in the middle of winter because, how do we know? Because sheep would not be grazing in the middle of December.
Sure, maybe.
Shepherds would not be watching over their flocks by night. They moved it to December because December was where all the good stuff from the pagans were happening.
It's probably a made-up story anyway.
Probably so. Nonetheless, they wanted to match it up with parties that people already really like. So it's like, hey, you loved Saturnalia and the Yule and the winter solstice. Let's put the birth of baby Jesus in there.
Yeah.
And then it became an excuse for people to get really lit and and not just in the Yule log sense. And so you had Oliver Cromwell banning the celebration of Christmas and the early Puritans banning the celebration of Christmas. And, you know, it sort of started coming back a bit. And then it was the publication of A Christmas Carol, which was a gigantically popular book, like probably the most popular thing Charles Dickens ever wrote in his lifetime and beyond, that people looked at Christmas the way we look at it now, is this a season of joy and goodwill and of charity and all this kind of stuff.
Its influence shaped the way we experience the holiday today.
Absolutely.
150
years-ish
later.
I mean, and that's why so much of the kind of stock Christmas imagery that we see is sort of steeped in Victoriana because of Dickens, you know, like because of that period, you know, the mid-19th century.
Right.
The book turns 175 next year. Again, none of this is in the movie.
No, you know, it's
I took my very, very brilliant sister-in-law, Susan.
Yes.
Hi, Susan. To see this movie with me. You know, and she has a BA from Wake Forest University. Thank you very much.
That's right, yeah.
And when somebody in the film says, oh, Christmas, it's a minor holiday, she turned to me and was like, what? And again, yeah, it's like it was a minor holiday. And the movie doesn't explain that. It doesn't explain why this story was a pivotal, you know, shift in the celebration of the holiday. So the man who invented Christmas never explains why Charles Dickens is the man who invented Christmas.
Yeah. But more importantly for me, I was so fed up with the characters from A Christmas Carol bouncing around behind Charles Dickens,
right,
saying things like, "These are the chains I forged in life, link by link and yard by yard." And I was like, can you shut up? Let him write. And everyone is doing sort of like a nudge-nudge, wink-wink kind of performance, and Dan Stevens is
the worst.
Pulling every kind of face imaginable for the camera. Like, boing, zoinks, you know, like, it's those kinds of faces. And I'm thinking, you're a very good actor. What's happening here? Why is this movie doing this to me?
There are a lot of really good actors in this movie that are doing it right. You know, I liked Simon Callow. I liked Miriam Margolyes. As the housemaid.
Because she's great, Miriam Margolyes. Because
she's great.
Yeah.
Plumber Scrooge. I'm like, oh my God, could we just do a straight up Christmas Carol with this Scrooge? Because that would be great.
Right.
But yeah, Dan Stevens is just...
miscast.
Yeah, I think so. But the weird thing is... I think he is doing what the movie is doing, and what the movie is doing is wrong.
Yeah.
So read the book.
It's such a weird film and not worth looking at.
Yeah, read the book and
read this book.
Enjoy your favorite A Christmas Carol this season. I, of course, always recommend the 1970s Scrooge with Albert Finney, but you know, maybe you prefer Mickey or the Muppets or Alistair Sim or George C. Scott or Tori Spelling. Bill Murray. There's any number of choices out there, but you can skip this one.
All right, DVD recommendations, and they are as follows.
I'm going to say The Book of Life, because people have kind of forgotten about that movie already. It sort of came and made a splash and went away. It's a different take on the Day of the Dead stuff, and it's a different visual style, but...
Who's the character in Book of Life that sort of announces himself every time?
Joaquin!
With a yelp.
Yeah. Yes, the character, the one who's voiced by Channing Tatum, his name is Joaquin, and every time he goes riding off triumphantly, he goes, Joaquin!
That's really funny.
Yeah, it's a fun movie, and it looks really cool, and it's a different experience than Coco, but they both get it right in their own way. So, yeah, if you've never seen it, check it out.
Because Sonia Braga pops up for 3 seconds.
In Wonder.
And coincidentally, a film that she was in last year just came out on DVD
and Blu-ray
after a year after its release, which is weird. Normally it happens much more quickly than this.
Well, you know, maybe it's the kind of thing where they were like still taking it out city to city or something.
Perhaps. But it's called Aquarius. It came out last year. It's from, say his name because he's your pal.
Kleber Mendonca Filho.
Yeah. Thank you. And it stars Sonia Braga. A widow in her 60s. She's a music critic, retired, but she was there during, like, you know, the heyday of the 60s and 70s. So she's got this kick-ass record collection. Her family had this, like, really nice, you know...
Beachside
home in Brazil. And she's the last person living in the building.
Yeah, it's an apartment.
It's a
big apartment.
Rambling, you know, fancy people apartment.
Yeah, with a balcony that looks right out onto the ocean.
Right. And she's the last person left in the building because everyone else has sold to a development company that wants to shred the place.
Yeah.
And build like a hotel or whatever.
Bunch of soulless high rises.
And she is digging in her heels. And not budging. And that's kind of what the whole movie's about. The movie's about her resistance to people trying to steal her life.
Right. And the awful depths to which these real estate people will go to try and make her leave.
And the equally awful and cool depths that she will go to take
to
care
thwart them.
To take care of her business.
Yeah.
Which... It's this strange hybrid of, like, quotidian daily life of this woman and how her relationships are with her friends and her family, and this sort of tense, who's going to win?
Yeah, the park is mine.
Who's going to win the battle sort of movie. And as it gets closer to the end, you get really swept up in the who's going to win element.
And she's so good in this.
And she's fantastic. And it's just, it's a very cool movie. Mendonca also did a film, a great movie called Neighboring Sounds a couple years earlier.
Which is also about real estate.
Highly recommend that as well. Both Aquarius right now. And once you see Aquarius and you like it, and you will, go watch Neighboring Sounds because it's fantastic.
Definitely. Letters?
I got letters here. I'm going to pull them up and read them. to you right now. This is from Jess. The phrase birth control haircut. Who said that?
Was
that
I did, but I forget in what context.
What was the what movie were
something
we
in the
about?
Last 6 weeks or yeah, so. Yeah, I've forgotten now.
The phrase birth control haircut keeps making me crack up and will now forever be a part of my lexicon. Y'all are my favorite.
Oh, thank you, Jess.
What movie were we talking about?
I don't remember.
I remember you saying it now. I just don't. Yeah. Anyway.
We see a lot of movies and we talk
and we
about
talk,
a lot of movies.
And then we forget. Yeah. Phil says, I saw Happy Death Day. I'm overjoyed to finally have a companion piece to my winter holiday favorite, 12 Dates of Christmas.
Which is an ABC Family movie that's basically Groundhog Day Christmas rom-com. It's on Netflix. It's actually pretty fun. It's Melissa Joan Hart and Mark Paul Gosselaar.
Sure. All right.
It is better than a lot of the Hallmark crap I've been watching the last couple of weeks. Trust me. There's a gauge.
I've lost my way in terms of knowing what that gauge is. Like, I don't know what good and bad is anymore because these Hallmark movies that you keep watching are sapping my entire aesthetic, judgment abilities.
So comforting.
He continues, I'm one of those people who hates heat. Me too. So when the temperatures fall into the 50s at night, the calendar moves into October, and I start seeing dead leaves crammed under my windshield wipers, and I start looking for the Halloween shows on the Family Channel and scanning the TV guide for the Charlie Brown holiday specials and the procession of back-to-school Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas displays, then clearance aisles in Target. So far, the movies in the Groundhog Day / Live, Die, Repeat time loop vein seems to be the most successful thematic device for me. I do wish they'd tied Happy Death Day in with Halloween to give it a regular yearly showing. Just as you noted, Mariah hooked her booty wagon to Christmas radio. Booty wagon!
Oh, and on an upcoming...
That's going to be my new birth control haircut.
On an upcoming LKTV, we'll be talking about Mariah's new direct-to-DVD feature film.
Oh, God.
Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas.
It's so terrible.
Spoiler. It sucks.
I stared at the actress trying to pin down her familiar face, then realized she was a roommate who made googly eyes at the wine glass in La La Land.
Yes.
My brain still works without the internet and IMDb. Oops, I rambled. Linoleum knifer out. Thank you, Phil.
Indeed.
And here is a letter from, where did I lose it? I just lost it.
Oh, Dave White.
Wait, where did it go? I had it. And now I have it. I have it again.
Okay, good.
Thank you. Sophie.
If you are a listener of Linoleum Knife and Fork.
You know the saga of Sophie.
Yes. L'estance de Sophie.
On Linoleum Knife and Fork, we've been gathering up easy recipes.
Yes.
For the overworked and exhausted Sophie.
Well, she now needs some overwork film suggestions.
You need a lot of things, Sophie.
But you know what? She asked.
Yes, she did. And we're happy to interact.
I hope we've woken her up on the bus
and to give.
By saying her name again.
Yes. Hi, guys. My girlfriend and I both work in the world of the nonprofit. Myself in the violence against women and transitionary housing sector, and her in the addiction treatment where she focuses on street-involved youth.
Oh, my God. Y'all are amazing.
I'm also currently doing my master's in social work, where I'm writing my thesis on LGBT and seniors aging with chronic illnesses and mental health issues. Needless to say, by the time we get home at night, we often lack the physical and emotional energy to feed ourselves. I know about that part.
Yes, that's covered.
Let alone watch a difficult or emotionally fraught film. Now, come on now. Those are my favorite.
You got to be in the mood.
This sucks because we actually met at a Canadian indie film festival and loved weird art house and political films. But now anything more complex than Pride, the one about the miners' strike, not the one about lions, leaves us too depressed or exhausted to make dinner or shower. And when we set aside some time last weekend to watch In Jackson Heights, we both fell asleep. Maybe that was our fault for scheduling it after a day where I had to turn away a trans woman trying to escape her boyfriend because our dang system prioritizes women with children. And my girlfriend learned that one of her clients died of an overdose. But the fact is that unfortunately describe a lot of our days, and we're not about to stop watching movies. I'd be interested to hear any movie recommendations you might have for shorter, softer movies that we can watch together in the evening and actually feel like we're getting a break rather than like we were getting another emotional beating. Look, I'll tell you something, Sophie. As much as those dark, difficult, four-hour, you know, grueling art house jams are my jam, I'm totally with you. As I've mentioned recently a couple times, I'm beat. I'm completely exhausted. And I've been doing the same thing. I haven't been on social media in 6 weeks. I haven't done a thing. I haven't watched anything that I don't have to watch for job. Mm. I've been sitting on the couch just staring blankly at those dumb Hallmark movies that you're looking at and going, who cares? What's the point? So I feel you. I know.
The first thing I think of is What's Up, Doc? That's just a movie that always makes me feel good.
She continues, I would be particularly interested to hear if there is anything that Dave recommends that he used to relax to during his time teaching. I have enough friends who are beginning teachers to know that that profession often packs as much or more of a punch than social work. Sorry, this was a long email, but I just got off another 12-hour shift, so I am not very eloquent right now. My girlfriend and I love the show, and the extended linoleum knife universe, and often fall asleep to your sonorous tones.
You are GD heroes, Sophie.
I'll tell you something. When I was a teacher, I was very young. I was in my 20s and my early 30s. And I had a lot more energy than I do now. And so I used to come home from teaching and I had a routine, in fact. Remember in Harriet the Spy? She would come home from school every day and old Golly would give her a piece of cake and a glass of milk. And Harriet was like demanding of this. Like, it's time for my cake and milk.
Oh, she would take the tomato sandwich to school for lunch.
Yes.
And then have the guests. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that was me. I would always make sure that I had myself a treat when I came home from work. I would come home for about 4 o'clock ish, like between 3 and 4. Like, I didn't stay at school very long. I was more likely to arrive early to get my work done than to stay late, because at 3 o'clock you're
wiped.
You're not going to sit down and start grading papers or reading things. You gotta go.
Yeah.
Unless there's a faculty meeting, you gotta go.
Yeah.
But I would happily show up an hour and a half before the first bell to get work done because my brain is fresh then. Anyway. I still watched all kind of difficult things after that. But what I would do every day after work, I'd get home and have my cake and milk or whatever treat I had in milk, and I would watch Oprah for an hour. And then I'd watch the local news, which is fantastic. You get to learn about all the weather and the traffic and the home invasions, which are endlessly exciting to me.
All right, well, let's give her some...
But here's some recommendations. I love kind of anything that happens to be presented to me on Turner Classic Movies. I don't know if you have Turner Classic Movies on your television, but
anything with Cary Grant is probably a good
by bet. That I mean, no, you know what? I'm mad at Cary Grant, except for the Philadelphia Story. I've been recently quite mad at Cary Grant because he was so mean
to Ori Kelly,
and such a jerk to Ori Kelly that unless it's Philadelphia Story, I cannot look at it. I cannot look at that man right now in life and think what a cool dude he was because he was being mean to Ori Kelly.
I mean, I get it. I this is the first Christmas in years that I'm not watching The Ref.
Well, yeah.
But
yeah, I don't think we're watching it anymore.
That is some world-class anger if you're mad about something that happened 90 years ago, but fair enough.
Was it 90 years ago?
80. Yeah, it was before Carrie moved to Hollywood.
No, it was on sets. It was on Hollywood sets.
He was mean to him later, but
yeah.
their relationship happened.
Their relationship happened, but then on sets in Hollywood, he would be cruel to him.
Right. Okay. That
and
was
mock him.
Okay.
Mock him for being
gay. No, I know. I know. Yeah. That was 70 years ago. Fair enough. Cary was bad.
Cary Grant, you already got it in with Lori Kelly. Now you're going to tell him. Now you're going to say homophobic stuff to him. That's not nice.
Creep.
Anyway. The Philadelphia story is really great. I would sit down and watch that anytime and
sure.
just pretend I wasn't angry at Cary Grant.
Gentlemen Prefer Blondes.
Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. That's actually my number one.
Yeah.
Gentlemen Prefer Blondes can be on TV and half over, and if I notice that it's on TV, I will find whatever ice cream is in the fridge or leftover food of dinner.
Yikes.
A car just almost crashed, but did not, outside of our window. And I will, at any time of the day that it's on, I will put on pajamas and eat that food on the couch while watching Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. It is magnificent.
I would throw duck soup in there.
Any Marx Brothers movie, any Three Stooges short that happens to be on cable. Even crappy old musicals.
Sure.
I'm down for those.
As long as they're not Gigi.
As long as they're not Gigi, which is...
It's a problematic fave.
It's puke. Listen, it was never even a fave.
I know, you didn't like it in the... You never...
I saw it the first time and thought, ugh, I hate this. Any old 70s disaster movie?
Oh, sure, yeah. Any live-action Disney movie of the 60s or 70s?
Oh, yeah. Parent Trap.
Yeah.
Or really any of them.
No Deposit, No Return.
Yeah. Generally...
Do we still have Candle Shoe and Devo?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Generally, old things, old musicals, old black and white movies...
Are more divorced from reality.
Yeah, yeah. You really are... transported to a different situation.
Yeah. I mean, not that there aren't films from that era that can be just as heavy. Like, I'm very excited that I'll Be Seeing You just came out on Blu-ray, which is a movie to my Christmas book.
And it is the new LK Selector item.
That's right.
For those of you who are on Patreon at the tippity-top level.
Mm-hmm.
And don't do this.
Stop.
No. Don't tell me to stop. We've tapped out. We've maxed out at the number of people that can be at that top level.
Well,
I can't handle any more people at that top level.
If you really want to be at that level, we'll make it work.
We'll talk about it, but someone's going to have to die.
No.
Yes.
We'll accommodate you.
Don't make promises. I'm capping the limit.
Patreon.com/Lenore.
I am capping the top limit.
Anyway, I'll Be Seeing You.
There are so many good other levels.
It's a
$4 level, the $7 level.
Is an intense
those are the
film
best.
About like,
those are the best levels.
Really damaged people. So it's not a carefree lark. But carefree is with Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire.
You're not the man that has to go to the post office.
I know, baby.
With boxes of merch and DVDs and things. The badges just came.
Mm-hmm.
They're so cool.
They are so cool.
Finally, all the merch is here.
Yeah.
I've been shipping out things kind of half full to people, but now everything can go out.
So great. Yeah. We've timed it perfectly now so you can spend December going to the post office.
No. It's happening right now. I'm practically finished.
Okay, great. Anyway,
don't laugh at me.
Go for the old and fluffy, Sophie. Yeah. You'll feel better.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, What's Up, Doc? Will really,
for sure.
What's Up, Doc? Will make you very happy.
Yes.
Is there anything recent? You know what? Mrs. Doubtfire. Sure do like Mrs. Doubtfire.
My Best Friend's Wedding.
Eh.
Okay.
It's fine.
All right. Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion.
Yeah, Romy and Michelle, Heathers, Mean Girls,
those get a little dark. I mean, Heathers especially, but I mean, they're still fun.
I think they're comfort.
Pee-wee's
Big Adventure, we just watched that.
Yes.
At our Linoleum Knife Club meeting.
That's right.
which is not at the $20 level.
No.
Which you should not do. Don't do the $20 level, please. Please don't. I love everyone who does. Grateful for everyone who does. And now there are enough of you. There are plenty. There's all that can. There's no more room in the pool.
Whatever, Dave White.
Losing my mind with shipping, packaging, and handling.
All right. Are we done?
Yes.
Yes? Okay.
Yes.
All right. Hey, if you are in Los Angeles, on December 3rd, I'm going to be appearing at the Voyager Institute screening. Brett Berg who will be showing a mercifully chopped down version of Jack Frost starring Michael Keaton. And then after that, he and I will sit down and talk about Christmas movies. That's going to be a lot of fun. Just look for, there's an event page for it on Facebook. Check that out. And we're going into the holiday season, so a reminder about some Christmas-related podcasts, if you're into that sort of thing.
So, whoop-dee-doo.
And Dickory Dock. I'm a big fan of the Christmas Stocking podcast, the Christmas Past podcast, which just started last year and is a really cool historical podcast about the holiday.
No.
Yeah, and then, of course, there's always Tis the Podcast, which is a year-round show that's devoted to Christmas movies and TV specials. Also, go check out ChrissyLemire.com and Bibbs and Whitney are back, not only with Cancel Too Soon, but they now have Critically Acclaimed, which you can hear on the Schmoes Know Network. So check that show out.
They got a network.
They do. Good for them.
So do you. You got a network.
I got it. Yes, true. I'm on Who Shot You over
you're really on a network. I'm a substitute for you sometimes on the Pop Rocket.
Right.
On that network. But not, you know.
At the moment, I'm on
the Who. The OGs are all coming back, and we're going to be a distant memory.
Yes, we'll be like the Who. But yeah, yeah. I'm on Who Shot You over on at MaximumFun.org. Check out The Schmoes Know and Dennis Henley with Dennis Hensley and the Comics Canon and All Things Cozy and Sewers of Paris, Fat Guys of the Movies that I will be appearing on again in December to talk again about, guess what, Christmas movies. The Criterion Cast, Film Spotting, SVU, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show for free at iTunes, and if you do, that'd be a great time to go leave us a 5-star review.
Only 5.
And you can also leave us positive feedback at all the places that we stream, like Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, Google Play, Podbean, CastBox, etc. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at LinoleumCast. Thank you to Blue for our wonderful theme music. Visit him at Bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA, and he does have a great Christmas album, so you might check that out as well. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions or comments. And hey, join our club, patreon.com/linoleumknife. We have extra shows and fun prizes like the aforementioned buttons and selector items and whatnot.
No, we don't have any more selector items.
So go.
That's for the $20 people.
Go check out our Patreon and join at whatever level you want to.
Don't join at $20, please.
Y'all are great. Thanks for listening.
Money isn't everything.
Have a great Thanksgiving. We'll be back soon.
Goodbye.